Welcome to the Midwest Game Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, John. Here with me today is Alex.
Hello.
Brian is not here, so too bad. Today, we're going to talk about some news. Alex is going to talk about his experiences playing Resident Evil 4 in VR on the PSVR 2. But before we get to all that, you can listen to all the places. Sorry, you can find all the places that you can listen to the show at MidwestGameNerds.com/links. I'm never going to get that line right, ever. Even though I read it, I have it spelled out in front of me.
Everybody knows we can't read, so.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. The Midwest Podcast Network does have a Patreon. The Patreon supports all the shows on the network. You can subscribe for as little as $1 a month and help keep our shows alive and well. Check it out at mpn.bz/Patreon. Thanks to JCK, Tom Z, David O, and Corey Z for the contributions. One of the perks of joining the Patreon is to get early access to our bonus episodes that we call Side Quests. Side Quests are where we veer off outside the realm of video games into food, beverages, movies, TV, and more. Join our Patreon to get those episodes a week early. As always, we do appreciate your feedback, which you can send to MidwestGameNerds@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate and review us on your favorite podcatcher. Alex, any bumpers for the network?
Yes, kind of. The Horror Movie Yearbook Boys, I don't believe, have selected what their next episode will be about. But right now they have a tiny tear up about Willie is taking a trip to the farmhouse that the turtles escaped to in the 1990s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film. It's something he's wanted to do for a long time. I think there's a bunch of filming locations for the movie around that farmhouse as well.
Like, he knows the turtles aren't there, right? Like,
North they're Carolina. Not. I mean, who knows? Who knows? Those old rotten rubber suits might be somewhere in the farmhouse. But no, he's wanted to do this forever. Like, since before I met him, probably. So I'm incredibly happy that he's finally going to do it. And you can hear him talk about it with Tim over on Horror Movie Yearbook on their latest Tiny Terror.
Right on.
So check that out.
I'm likely going to be getting passes for the next MC3 Motor City Comic Con coming up in May. Nice. And I will probably extend those to those two guys because they seem the most likely to have the opportunity to go. So
yeah, I know Willie, and I know both of them enjoy going to the cons a bit. It's a bit, there's too many people for me. I just don't. Even before the pandemic, I never liked being around that many people. But
yeah, no, PAX was a stretch for me. Like
PAX was a lot. It's a little. I don't know why I think of it as a little different though. I don't know. Maybe I'm just inherently more interested in the video game aspect of it all. But it's still very visually overstimulating.
It's a different level of fandom. You know, a different kind of fandom, a different level of nerd. So.
I feel like for the local cons, I'm really only there to like see celebrities from afar.
Right, right.
And that's about it. Because I don't want to wait in the massive lines to go and get, you know, Walking Daryl's autograph or something. But
right anyway, on.
We should go if Norman Reedus ever comes to get a signed copy of Death Stranding, but.
That would be pretty sweet, actually.
That would be pretty rad. But I'm sure his line would be wrapped around the building for several days. So,
I used to know the guy who handled artist relations, like celebrity relations for MC3. So if he did show up, there's a good chance I might be able to arrange an actual like off-site meetup of some sort.
That'd be cool. Honestly, if he could even just slip him a copy of the game, be like, hey, can you get Norman to sign this for us, that'd be pretty cool. But
I could probably figure that out.
That'd be fun.
So anyways, so let's talk about Resident Evil 4 in PSVR 2.
So I've played the first two chapters so far, and it is very stressful.
In what ways?
It's just
mechanically,
you know what? It's very interesting. Like, you may remember back to when I originally talked about the remake earlier last year, that do you remember in Resident Evil 4 when you first, like one of the first big sequences you hit, you enter the village and they just throw zombies at you until it's a timer. Like you just have to. You have to survive for X amount of time. They will continue to throw zombies at you even if you kill them.
Yeah, until the bell rings or whatever at the church, like...
Yes, yes. So they do that again in the remake, and interestingly enough, I don't know if it's just because I got through it playing normally, but playing it in VR felt like it was way easier, just because I could literally hold the gun up to the head of a zombie as I'm walking by to shoot it, which is really interesting to me. Like...
It feels like your arm, the autonomy of your arm doing its own action separate from having to otherwise aim and move felt easier.
I think so. It just, the muscle memory is there enough, and just kind of the spatial awareness, it just clicks a little bit more, and it makes me, I don't know if I was like bobbing and weaving as I was playing or what the deal was, but I just felt like I was more free and able to get away from the zombies as I went, which was very cool.
That's, well, it's funny. Like it's interesting to hear that, because the original, you go all the way back to the original Resident Evils, and they had tank controls, and then like Resident Evil 4 was a departure from that. So what you're saying is like it has taken an even larger departure from that in this first person virtual reality mode. That somehow like feels more fluid and like natural.
I don't know if it's just a... Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like the locomotion that you're doing with those take controls is such a weird abstraction of how you would move as a human.
Right.
That like, it just doesn't quite work.
Right, you're not gonna spin to the right, like, you know, 270 degrees to turn left.
You don't turn your torso completely in the way that you're going. Like it's right. It's much more smooth and fluid. So the idea that your body is more of the input controller for this Resident Evil 4 VR maybe just naturally makes it more controllable and easier to handle and easier to avoid things. So that's an interesting side effect that I didn't really think about.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I will say is that Resident Evil 7 obviously was also in VR, but the biggest difference here is that Resident Evil 7 on PS4, PSVR 1 was controller controlled. You did not use the Move controllers to control that. They never put that in or anything. Resident Evil 4 VR in PSVR 2 uses the Sense controllers from the VR headset. So you do have individual control of your hands in a way. So that's maybe one reason why it felt kind of novel to me. One of the other things that I think is really interesting is there's like the shortcuts that you have for items are all on your body. So depending on where you put your hand, you click in the L1 or R1 buttons on the Sense controllers to grab an item off of your body, whether it's a grenade or your handguns or ammo for your handgun, which is really cool. Like I can reach over my shoulder to grab my shotgun. I can reach over the other shoulder to grab the rifle. You know, the pistol's always down at your hip or whatever.
Like that's fascinating. Like from a programmer standpoint to have to map the motions of the accelerometers and the controllers to like correspond with different bodily movements. Cause it's not like they're using the cameras to track that kind of stuff necessarily.
Well, I think they kind of are, because I think it's mostly about the location below the headset, you know, like how far is your hand from the headset and where is it in relation to the headset? But it is interesting because it's not like there's no cameras on the headset that are going to see me reach to my shoulder. So I don't know exactly what magic they're doing.
Like that's the thing is like they must have measured using the controller and the accelerometers, like mapping those particular motions, like how does the accelerometer move like when I go to put my hand up to my shoulder, how does the accelerometer move when I go to touch my belt, and like map that out and then just program that as like a key mechanic of like item management. Like that's crazy to think about.
It's really cool and it works very well. The other thing I'll say is that like there's an option to change this, but there's like literal extensive reloading that you need to do for each weapon. So like you have to, if you empty your clip in your handgun, you have to hit a button to release the clip. You have to grab a clip from the pouch that's at your waist. You have to put it into the gun. and you have to pull back the slide to load a bullet into the chamber and then let it go to be able to fire again. So literally you're like incentivized to dump your clip with a bullet left to then put in another clip, because then you don't have to pull the slide. So it's just like it just becomes way more harried when you run out of ammo in your handgun, even if you can reload.
You're taking more notice of how many bullets you're using at a time to like not have absolutely. To pull the slide, like you said, you know, like it makes you more cognizant of that. Whereas like if you're just playing the game normally, like you're firing until you run out and then you reload, like,
yeah. There's no point in the original game where I think it would be fun for you to have to press a button in order to like cock the slide back or whatever. So the handgun works like that. The other two that I've used so far, the shotgun, I don't think they make you load individual shells, which is good, because that would be like way too, way too difficult in the game. But you do have to actually pump the shotgun, like, and it was really messing with me, because I would fire a shot and be like, I know I have more in this, and then I'd be like, oh, I need to actually pump the shotgun. So it's just weird to like bring the weapon to your other hand in order to pump it, or reach your hand out to pump the shotgun. It's just an insane.
Are you otherwise like firing it from the hip? Like you're not two hand firing that, like ADR?
I think literally every weapon, like the handgun, you can hold up your other hand, and I think it stabilizes it a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think with the shotgun, you can hold it with two hands if you want. I think I was mostly firing it out like just single-handed, because it's a shotgun, right?
Yeah, like, you're out there like Wesley Snipes, you know, in Blade, yes, with the absolutely. Just single hand firing a shotgun with a. Like a short barrel shotgun. Like
my shotgun tends to be, especially in Resident Evil games, it's my oh shit weapon of like, I need, they're right up on me. I don't need to aim that hard. So I'm just going to whip it out and just pull the trigger and hopefully everything's good. The last one was the rifle, which, you know, you do have to hold both of that one. I know I was holding with both hands, and you do have to hold your hands up to your eye, up to the headset, to look through look through the actual sight that you have on it. And then every time you fire, like the weird thing was I never thought to continue holding with my left hand and then pull the slide. I always was like reaching over with my left hand to pull the slide while still holding the trigger with my right hand.
Interesting.
It's just because I'm an idiot, I would assume.
You're Polish. That's the Polish way of of reloading a gun.
So I'll have to try that and see if I can still hold it with the.
Did you turn it around and look down the barrel to make sure there was a bullet in it?
No, I did not. But no, it's a really incredible experience. I'm excited to play more of it. I'm curious to see, because I know they did Resident Evil 4 and 8. Relatively, like the VR modes came out relatively close to each other, so I'm very curious to see how similar they are and if there's any major differences. It's very cool. The only thing that I think is a little bit disappointing is that in every cutscene and anytime Leon does a melee or goes up a ladder, it pulls you out to third person mode. I think partly, like, at least for the melee and the ladder, it's a little bit of a comfortability thing, I would guess. I don't know. Because, I mean, you climb up ladders all the time in the Horizon game, so I'm not really sure. But, it's a little bit disappointing. But it's just a very minor. I got over it pretty quickly. So, Resident Evil 4 VR, very cool. And I'm excited to play more after I'm done with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which should be soon. I'm at 87 hours.
Oh my god.
And
crazy.
I will say that I am in the Temple of the Ancients, so I have made it there. Very curious to see how it ends. But I've been
loving every minute of it. You don't have to spoil anything, but has there been any resolution to what ideas are introduced to you in the first like section of the game, like when you're done with the Zach segment?
It's still kind of they've hinted towards it. You do revisit that, like, whatever's going on there a couple times throughout the game.
Okay.
But they're not really, like, meeting out a whole lot of detail and, like, exactly what you're looking at.
Is it done in, like, a flashback sort of, like, method?
No. Not really. It's just kind of a, hey, we're going to break from the scene of your regularly scheduled program and go see what's going on over here. Like, it very much... Yeah, so I feel like there's like heavy suggestion of what's going on with that, but I still don't quite understand it, and I'm curious if after I'm done with the game, maybe I will need to watch an explainer or something from somebody who's more deeply understood what's going on, but I'll have to see. So,
right on. Well, I haven't played anything in weeks. But I have been kind of keeping up on some of the like other things that are coming out this year. I watch I subscribe to Game Ranks on YouTube, and I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, but
a little bit.
They do a lot of before you buy game like videos about games coming out, and they do a weekly like Friday roundup of everything that was announced during the week. Nice. Good, well produced videos. The guys that do the voiceover are all really good. Jake Baldino, who is the main guy who does the Friday roundup, awesome. My only gripe is that his mid-roll ad reads are like kind of long-winded, and they could be a little bit quicker, but they probably have some specification that they have to say an ad for X amount of time, yada yada. Anyways, they posted up a video today about the top 15 new co-op games coming out in 2024, and I found a couple of things really interesting. First thing is Little Nightmares 3. Did you play Little Nightmares 1 and 2 at all?
No.
I tried playing 1, and it glitched out on me at one point, and I kind of gave up, but the interesting thing about Little Nightmares 3 is that it's still being produced by Bandai Namco, but the developer is Supermassive.
Interesting.
Which, as they say in the video from Game Ranks, that this, you know, Supermassive knows their way around horror, which Little Nightmares is like a horror, like child horror kind of genre of game.
Yeah.
So it'll be really cool to check that out. And I didn't even realize those games were co-op. I don't know if the first two were, but the third one is, and you can play it with an AI companion, or you can play it with an actual person.
Interesting.
Playing as the other characters. So found that really cool. And then another one that popped up is Terminator Survivors. And it's a Terminator game that's a survival game. And you're human, and you have to hunt, like, you have to go and start, it takes place right after Judgment Day.
Okay.
And you're basically, like, hunting the Terminators, and, like, building up resources in a base and stuff. It's, like, right up Nick and Gojo's alley, like, 100%. I believe it comes out October 24th of 24, so 10-24-24. I don't know if that has any significance in the Terminator lore, but it probably does to some extent. But I thought that sounded awesome. So I want to check that out, because that's one that wasn't even on our radar at the beginning of the year when we did our most anticipated. So, and then they also mentioned the John Carpenter's Toxic Commando, which I know had been mentioned previously. They said it was like Left 4 Dead, but in a vehicle. And I didn't realize like that was kind of the gist of it, but that sounds cool to me. And then the Killer Clowns from Outer Space game is coming out this year. So I'm a fan of the original movie, but the big one that stuck out to me was that Terminator Survivor one, because if they're like combining like, you know, the forest and like any of the other survival games
like Ghost Recon with
like
Terminators.
With like Ghost Recon and like The Division, but they're doing it with Terminators. Like I'm on board for that. totally. Like, that sounds awesome to me.
Yeah, so. I feel like it's one where, like, it seems like there could be, like, I feel like I'd want to wait for some reviews, but I feel like there could be people that are really into it. I think it's the same publisher that did RoboCop, the RoboCop Rogue City that came out late last year.
It could be. Like, the little trailer segment they show in the GameRanks video looks crazy good. It's probably mostly just FMV, like, not even actual gameplay or anything, but I the whole premise, the whole idea sounds cool to me.
I'm into that. I know that there are some people that liked the, I think there was a Terminator game that came out somewhat recently. But it's weird that there's not Terminator Resistance is what it's called. It's weird that there's not more great Terminator anything. I mean, the video game, the movies have really gone downhill, but I wish there was like a good video game or something to.
I'm sure a lot of that is due to the fact that like it's a Hollywood property that there's a lot of licensing to work around kind of thing. And I'm sure, what's his nuts? Director
James Cameron,
he's gonna want a lot of control of that because that's one of his babies, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he's been kind of
hands off.
Not hands off, but like he. I've seen some of these Terminator movies that have come out in the meantime, and I feel like he's kind of just like, yeah, do whatever.
Yeah, just write me a check so I can keep making Avatar movies. I don't care about any of that other shit.
That kind
of
seems like where he's at.
Yeah, go ahead, put Titanic in IMAX again. Let's do this. I need another payday. It's like
another house.
It's like playing online poker to like pay your bills. Like, but he just like re-releases a movie or like signs another like licensing letter for Terminator.
Yeah,
but like,
you can put my name on that one.
This game looks cool. In the little trailer, they show the characters like, you know, trying to find gas for their vehicle, and then a Terminator kind of steps out of nowhere and like, you know, goes to fuck them up or whatever. I'm on board. I think that's dope. I don't know what other kind of Terminator game I would really want. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I guess like a PvPvE kind of like, you know, I mean, we kind of get it with Helldivers, right? With the automatons, like you're kind of playing that sort of thing anyways, but except it doesn't take place on Earth. It takes place, you know, in some random ass galaxy because Earth has been destroyed. So, but yeah, it sounds awesome and I'm on board. I want to play it.
I feel like there's some sort of missing. I've never played Alien Isolation.
Yeah.
But I bet there's a cool idea for a Terminator game based off of Alien Isolation where you're
where you're being hunted, but maybe in like a much larger world. Like,
yes. Like you have a whole city that you need to, you know,
that would be interesting,
but
something like that. I could see like a StarCraft style game of like Terminator where you can choose to be the Terminators or you can choose to be the Resistance, you know, and like, You're building bases.
Just a squad of four T-1000s that are trying to kill all the humans that are still left on Earth.
Yeah, awesome. They're just walking around going, "Yes, my lord. Yeah. Yes, we must get rid of the fog of war so we could see the whole map." What did the Goblin Sappers say? I don't even remember.
I can't remember.
The Dwarven Demolitions team from Warcraft 2.
Yeah.
Oh,
I
can
just think of like, I don't know, gonna try and figure out a StarCraft thing to say. We need to construct additional pylons.
Yeah.
We need more CPU neural net processors to be created. They are learning computer.
No, that's cool.
I feel like a StarCraft style, like some kind of RTS would be like right up Terminator's alley. But this whole survival thing seems really cool. And I guess part of my issue with playing survival games is I always do want to play them co-op because they're typically engineered that way. But like finding the time to like correspond with other people to play them is never easy. So I'm hoping it has like a relatively rewarding single player experience too.
Yeah, I wish there were more games that had the ability to do like a dedicated server situation where like this seems like the kind of game where it'd be kind of cool if you had like a base that you shared with people and you could like collect resources together and build out your base or whatever. So that way, if you do like go off on your own excursions, it's maybe not like you can still collectively work together, even if you're not doing it in like a synchronous fashion. I think that would be interesting to see, but maybe that's been in some survival games and I just don't touch them because of the same reason.
I feel like that was kind of in The Forest. Like you could come and go from the same space.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it kind of depends on like if they have dedicated servers or not and how, I think Grounded was kind of like that. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, I don't know. That would be cool.
Anyways, yeah, other than that, I haven't played anything other than the lottery, and that doesn't count in this podcast. So
it's also not exciting unless you win millions of dollars.
Yeah, no, I won $4. So
nice.
Not enough to share with anybody, but I did win it.
Nice.
So anyways, we've got some new stuff to talk about, right?
Yes, we
or
do.
Did you have other games you want to talk about?
I was just going to say, I think my copy of Uiden Chronicles 100 Heroes is close to shipping because that Kickstarter is finally paying out its rewards.
Oh, sweet.
That game, I think, is coming out later this month. And that's the game from the several of the people who were on the team for the original Suikoden game. On Konami. I think the creator recently passed away, which is sad.
Bummer.
But I did get access to a beta for it. I haven't played any of it, but I'm excited to see what it's like and if it stokes the same fires that Suikoden used to. So hopefully more on that after I get through Final Fantasy, if that ever happens. But
for sure.
Yeah, so news. I know today, like earlier today, they revealed that Star Wars Outlaws, the upcoming game from Ubisoft, is going to be released on August 30th, 2024. They also released a story trailer that looked pretty interesting. It seems like there's plenty of references to a lot of other Star Wars stuff. You know, it seems like, I think obviously with the name like Outlaws, you're dealing with a lot of the crime syndicates that are in the Star Wars universe, including the Hutts and I think even what are they called, Crimson Dawn, who were really only from the Han Solo movie that came out, maybe a little bit in some of the cartoons. I'm not necessarily sure.
Did Starfield steal Crimson Fleet from that, or like are you mixing things up?
Let's take a look. Crimson Dawn. Crimson Dawn is from Star Wars. Yeah, Crimson Dawn is from Star Wars.
So did Starfield steal that then?
I guess they referenced it. I don't know. Maybe. Who knows?
No, that's cool.
Maybe their AI assistant mixed together some Star Wars and threw it in there. But no, it looks neat. I'm interested in seeing what it is. And you know, it's a single player Star Wars game, which you know, obviously the Jedi games have been pretty good, and very curious to see what Ubisoft's offering is like. So Star Wars Outlaws coming August 30th, 2024.
Yeah, I have a feeling that game's going to be a lot cooler than we're giving it credit for, just because it's a different take on like a Star Wars game.
Yeah, I think everything. It's Star Wars is such a weird proposition now because everybody wants something different out of it. And we don't need to really relitigate Star Wars, but I think it feels like I'm curious to see how much it strikes out on its own in the end, you know, considering like without getting into spoilers, Jedi Survivor, you know, obviously about a Jedi and like, it feels like this is, I wonder if there's going to be a lightsaber in this game or not. It seems like probably not, because I think it takes place between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. So Luke is probably the only person out there using his lightsaber with any real...
Right.
You know, but... yeah. I don't know. I'm just curious to see how it plays and what it's going to be like. So, Star Wars Outlaws. I did see some stories. Obviously, Destiny 2, The Final Shape, the final DLC for Destiny, is coming very soon. We're coming up on the 10th year of Destiny this year. So I do, it might be cool. I don't know how much Corey's still playing, but maybe we should call him up at some point and see what his
opinions are. It.
Yeah. Do another State of Destiny on the Game Nerds. I don't know if anybody listening is still playing Destiny. It seems like not many people are.
Yeah, I don't really know, but they said they would support the game for 10 years, right? And like,
yep.
Now this is it. Like, they're done. And yep. Then they're on to their next thing, whatever that is. Again, not Marathon.
Yeah, Marathon is something, but there's something else. I don't know. Who knows? But yeah, June 4th is Destiny 2, the Final Shape release date. So
I kind of wish I had kept up with the lore of that game, just because it was really interesting. But it felt like it just got so convoluted at some point, and like I don't even know where to begin to try and figure it out, but everything about Destiny is cool, and the game when I stopped playing was still fun. It just like
the shooting still feels good.
Yeah, it's a great feeling shooter still. But it's just not, yeah, it's not for me anymore. I don't have the time in my day to dedicate to keeping up with that game specifically. Yeah. 10 years ago, absolutely. Now, no way.
The headline that I'm looking at on IGN says that there's going to be like subclass mixing, and then also they're including the first new enemy faction in years. So, curious to understand what kind of shape that takes. And see how the Destiny fans react to it. I know also... I'm curious to understand if there's any, Lance Reddick, if there's any Reddick in there, or if they're doing, you know, if he recorded anything for it, or how they're going to handle that. Maybe they've talked about that a little bit in the past, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I would assume maybe they got some like AI voiceover rights from him or something to some extent. That technology was kind of around when he was still here.
Yeah, so. I'm not sure. I guess we'll have to see. I kind of hope they wouldn't do that. They should honor him in whatever way they're going to do. But
I don't know. I mean, if he really liked that character, maybe that is their way of honoring him, is just keeping that character going even without him around. But giving it as much of his life as they could, you know?
Yeah.
A matter of perception, I suppose.
I guess I have a Game Rant article. And it looks like...
Is Game Rant the clickbait one?
Maybe. It looks like there was a radio conversation between Zavala and Sloan that came out last June. That was his final lines that he recorded.
Okay.
So, that's a bummer. But, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what they do with Zavala in this final DLC.
Right on.
There was an announcement from Xbox. I guess I don't know if this was a full announcement or if it was just people were passing emails around, but it sounds like Xbox President Sarah Bond has set up a new team dedicated to game preservation and forward compatibility. This is marked as an exclusive from WindowsCentral.com by Jez Corden. Basically, there's emails that Windows Central received that were confirmed as genuine by Microsoft, saying that this team was created and briefed And they basically reiterated the idea that they're going to have a new Xbox hardware that is focused on delivering, quote, the biggest technical leap ever in a generation. And they have set up this dedicated team to future-proof our digital Xbox game libraries across future hardware paradigms to further, quote, build on Xbox's strong history of delivering backwards compatibility. Yeah, I think this is really cool, and I wish all game developers were doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like there's more... more and more games that are maybe being lost to time as like things like the 3DS shop closed down. And you know, who knows? I know, like, I don't think you can purchase things on the Xbox 360 store anymore, but you can still kind of purchase them on the website. It's all getting kind of weird and it makes me nervous. As I think I've talked about several times on the show, but it's cool to see that they have a team of people that are trying to ensure that, you know, whatever they come up with next, they'll still be able to play some of these older games. And who knows what that even means? Like, if they're kind of talking about this at the in the same breath with their new hardware, maybe that means that there's some sort of significant change in the hardware that would require them to do more work to ensure the backwards compatibility.
I mean, it could be just like the upscaling thing, you know, like up-resing and just being able to like take a game that's 15, 20 years old at this point and have it run on modern hardware and not feel dated, I guess, maybe, you know,
yeah,
something along those lines. But I didn't post this, but it was like it kept popping up in my Reddit feed that there's coming off of like, I'm pulling this from zleague.gg, but gamers fight to keep online games playable. And basically, like, there's a bunch of players advocating for laws that are going to ensure continued access to games after their official support ends. Like, that's something that people are, like, really pushing for. Well, and then I think Brian posted that thing about, was that City Heroes or whatever? Yeah. Like, there's guys, they just won a lawsuit, right? Like, is that what that was about?
No, I don't think it was a lawsuit. It's just that they have been working very closely with the publisher of City of Heroes to bring on a, like an unofficial
dedicated server.
Dedicated server, basically. Like they are now starting to they can now officially like basically keep the game running on these servers that are not being maintained by the actual game dev and the publisher.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Fairly unheard of, you know. I think this article from PC Gamer mentions a couple things about like EverQuest having people that had spawned like a server, and obviously I think there were people playing super early versions of WoW before WoW Vanilla came out as like an actual thing you could buy and play from Blizzard. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool work that's being done, and I hope that people continue to think about this kind of thing as things move forward. Like, it's interesting to me. I'm almost to the point where I feel like I don't mind rebuying games on PC because I feel like Steam is maybe the best guarantee of being able to continue playing and using that software, you know, like,
but wasn't something recently delisted too. That was like a kind of a big deal.
There's been games delisted. Are you thinking of maybe Spec Ops The Line?
No, I don't remember exactly what it was. I feel like I remember hearing about like a handful of games being delisted from Steam specifically. Like they're done with all their support and everything.
Maybe the Adult Swim games that I think was maybe
possibly.
Yeah. Like there's WB's got some weird stuff going on with all that. But the thing is that even when some of these games are delisted, usually if you have the rights, like if you purchased it, they can still allow you to download the game if you owned it, but you can't purchase it new because like licensing rights or something have lapsed or changed is basically how it usually goes.
Right.
So it feels like to me, like ideally Steam and whoever, even like the fan community, will continue to try making sure that the games you have on Steam are playable on like the latest version of Windows or whatever. Whereas like, I'll be able to build a computer in the future, but I can't build a PlayStation 3, you know, from scratch. So for it's sure, kind of hard to be like, yeah, let me, you know, not that I'm buying new games on PlayStation 3 anymore, but you get the point. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But, no, I think it's very cool that Xbox now has a team dedicated to this kind of thing. And
for sure.
I'm curious to see what effect that has on their future forward compatibility. So,
right on.
But yeah, that's pretty much everything that I had lined up. I don't know if you can think of anything else big that came out. Been a while since we did a big dump of news.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's like a lot of the news that's just been coming out is all about like the closures of this and that studio and firing of people here and there. And, you know, like there's not a ton of news beyond that, I guess. But
yeah, people waiting for Switch 2 and.
Yeah, there was like Hollow Knight Silksong has been listed. Like yeah, not available
on the Xbox store.
Yeah, it's there. Like you can still click over to it and see it like in the Xbox store. So that's something that people are getting kind of hot and bothered over that because they're all like, "Oh, it's coming soon, hopefully."
Yep.
And then there was also that where did I post it? That game that was I found there's the new deck is a 3D printable Steam Deck handheld. That's something that's pretty cool to look into. Basically like this, it's a, I believe it's on GitHub. You can find the whole build of materials and everything in like files for printing up your own 3D printable Steam Deck alternative. And then
it's like the guy that built a Switch out of all like third or not third party, but like repair parts off of eBay.
Yeah. And then there's that game Jump Ship that was announced. That's basically like Sea of Thieves, but in space. And it looks crazy cool. That's another co-op game that they didn't talk about on Game Ranks, but they did on their last Friday roundup. They talked about the trailer being dropped. But that game looks really sweet, too. And then, yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's pretty much all I have. I know there's been a lot more in the meantime when we haven't been around. GTA 6 was supposedly delayed a little bit longer. Who cares? I don't care about GTA.
Our most popular opinion.
Yeah, Dragon's Dogma 2 is not like there's some shit about that being not great.
I've absorbed a bit about that due to some of the podcasts that I listen to are pretty big fans of Dragon's Dogma. I think there's a lot of like weird hand wringing about that stuff where like obviously Capcom's been weird about microtransactions, and a lot of the stuff that people are complaining about in that is like stuff that you could literally like purchase jewels in Resident Evil 4 that you would be able to invest into the shop in order to like upgrade your weapons and things like that, which I would never do, and you're stupid if you did do it, because obviously you can just play the game and do like New Game Plus and get as many jewels as you want to get, and that's fine.
Right.
But if you are a very rich person and like you're like, I love Resident Evil 4, but I don't like playing it that much, so why don't I just pay to play less of it? That's cool. And I think it's kind of the same thing with Dragon's Dogma. So I think it's getting a bit overblown. Like, there are people saying that, like, oh, you can't fast travel as easily in the game because they want you to pay to be able to fast travel. But literally, like, if you go back to Dragon's Dogma Dark Arisen, or before that, the Dragon's Dogma that came out for PS3 and 360, that game was very much like, we want you to walk around and experience the world. We don't want you to fast travel between places. So I don't think it's very much like a, we're going to nickel and dime you, and we've made it hard to traverse this world so that you want to pay us to fast travel. But also, you can get the fast travel items in the game. They're just not super frequent. So, I don't know. I think it's a whole lot of hoopla about nothing. Obviously, I haven't played the game, but I know a lot of the criticisms. People that have criticisms about this are also people that have not played the game at all as well.
Yeah. So it's just kind of weird. Particularly the fast travel thing is something I find interesting just because, like, I suppose it just depends on how you play the game, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're just beelining it through the story, like, fast traveling is probably not that important of a thing. But if you're the type of person who's, like, going back and forth between areas and doing a bunch of collecting and whatever and resource management or whatever it is, maybe that makes it worth your time. You know, if you're investing like 90 hours into this game and what's another like $5.99 like to throw at that, I guess, to make for just a little cost of life improvement, you know, like who cares? But that's just, sure. That's just me. Like, I wouldn't really care if I was getting, it's the same thing of like look at Marvel Snap, for instance, not to bring that back up, but I was enjoying the game so much, I decided to invest money into it. You know what I mean? Like, yes. Same sort of thing where, like, if I'm enjoying the game enough to where, like, I'm like, ah, yeah, I'll throw a couple bucks at fast travel or whatever, you know, cost of life, you know, like, cost of living improvement it has. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Quality of life.
Yeah, quality of life. Man, I just...
you heard it here. John is lobbying for cost of life adjustments.
The anti-work subreddit is really getting to me. But yeah, it's like those quality of life improvements like that are worth, you know, that's what made, you know, paying for the season pass for Marvel Snap made Marvel Snap more enjoyable, like, in a way, you know, to be able to level your cards up faster and everything, like, because you had access to more, you know, credits or whatever the hell they were called in that game. Like, so
gold and, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't mind like having, you know, if I'm enjoying Dragon's Dogma enough, what's another $5, you know, or whatever,
but,
you know,
but also like, I get it. If people are kind of like, these are shitty microtransactions, like, why does this exist? But also like, it's not, I think if you look closely at the game, like, there's just this big worry of, like, they have tuned the game in such a way that it's incentivizing you to buy these microtransactions. And from my understanding, like, Dragon's Dogma from the get-go, there were microtransactions on PS3 and 360. I don't think there were to this level. But Dragon's Dogma has always been about kind of, like, the friction of existing in this fantasy world that is harsh and difficult to traverse and that kind of thing. So the idea that like it's always been like a difficult world to survive in necessarily, but it's not necessarily like they amped it up in order to sell more microtransactions, but
right.
You know, who knows, but I don't know. I want to check out that game at some point, but I still haven't checked out the first one, and that game is like 10 years old at this point. So
I tried playing the first one and I couldn't do it, man.
Yeah.
It just felt too wonky to me.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I've heard that.
Anyways. All right. Well, this is a quick one, but you know, maybe when Brian comes back, we'll have more to talk about.
He can talk about the quarry for a little bit.
Yeah, because he's probably finished it at this point or is going to finish it soon.
Yeah.
So, that being said, you can find all the places to listen to the show at MidwestGameNerds.com/links. The Midwest Podcast Network has a Patreon. Patreon supports all the shows on the network. You can subscribe for as little as $1 a month and help keep our shows alive and well. Check it out at mpn.bz/Patreon. Thanks again to JCK, Tom Z, David O, and Corey Z for the contributions. One of the perks of joining the Patreon is to get early access to a bonus episode that we call Side Quests. Side Quests are where we veer off outside the realm of video games into food, beverages, movies, TV, and more. Join our Patreon to get those episodes a week early. As always, we do appreciate your feedback, which you can send to MidwestGameNerds@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate and review us on your favorite podcatcher. Not sure what we're going to talk about next time, but We'll figure that out, and we will indulge your ears. And maybe Alex will finish Final Fantasy VII Rebirth by then, and he can talk about it.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't texted Webby about it at all yet, but I'm excited to at some point, so we'll have to see if we can get him on.
For sure.
To talk about it, too.
Right on. All right. Well, we will talk to you guys. We'll talk at you guys next time. See you. Peace.